remember going to the library as a kid with my mom and dad and sister and checking out as many books as I could carry. And when my own daughters were little, taking them to get their very own library cards was a rite of passage. Now, public libraries and communities across the country are under fire. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A new documentary called Free for All, the Public Library, premieres on Independent Lens on April 29th on PBS. It tells the story of the idea of this place where anyone can enter for free and explore a world of ideas and what it means to our nation. At the same time, public libraries have become a culture war battleground. Joining me in this recorded conversation to talk about the film and the pressure libraries are facing, our filmmaker, Dawn Logsdon. Thanks for being here, Dawn.
Thank you for having me.
And Eva Jane Romaine Coombe, director of the Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library, Paula Bremheger. Thanks for being here, Paula.
Thanks for having me.
Dawn, your documentary explores the evolution of public libraries in the U.S. and libraries as a rite of passage. What's your earliest memory of going to the library?
My very first memory of going to the library, I think it's engraved in my brain because it was a rather traumatic night, was the night of Hurricane Betsy in the 1960s in New Orleans, Louisiana. My mom brought us to the library. She was not from New Orleans, so she had no idea what was about to happen. And she just thought, rather than getting in all emergency supplies, she was going to go get a few books so we could have some new reading material while it was dark at night. And we read those books over and over and over again in the pitch dark while the wind was howling, and it just stuck in my mind.
Wow. And it sounds like, Dawn, when you started making this film, you were looking to really document the history of this trusted institution, and the public attitude towards libraries has changed for some. Talk about that and how that changed your approach.
You know, my initial approach was to follow one library, a big urban library that I saw as like a cultural melting pot of all kinds of people and ideas. And we were filming in Queens and in San Francisco. And the more I dug into the subject, the more I fell in love with the history. And the more I also started remembering my own childhood memories of little tiny rural and small town libraries. And it turned into a road trip.
And it's quite a road trip. It's fun the way you've presented it. Paula, I do want to talk about some of the challenges that libraries are facing. In Ohio, library funding has been a hot topic. Governor Mike DeWine recommended an increase in his budget proposal. The Ohio House passed a budget that changes how libraries are funded. How would this House budget affect funding for Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library short term and long term?
In Ohio, we have had a longstanding partnership with the state. It makes us unique. We have some of the best libraries in the country, and that's been in part thanks to that strong state partnership. For example, here in Cincinnati Hamilton County, we get about 50% of our overall funding from the state. So changes to that really do impact us pretty substantially still. We have worked with our local community and received a great deal of support, which we're thankful for as well. Now, currently, Governor DeWine, who recently called libraries the center of communities, which I agree with that, he and First Lady Fran DeWine are strong supporters. And we have a lot of support throughout the State House. The new budget, though, changes some of those longstanding parameters of that partnership, taking the Public Library Fund, which has been a dedicated fund for well over a decade, and moving it from being a percentage of the general revenue fund to a line item, which, you know, there's concern then it could have more impact and more immediate changes. It's, again, stable, consistent funding is what helps build public libraries like we see across Ohio. And to have ups and downs that cannot necessarily be anticipated every 2 years, it's very hard to plan for, especially when you have infrastructure and a lot of existing services that people clearly love. You know, when those changes come out and some initial changes had changed the formula that would make it a strict per capita calculation, and that had really, really catastrophic implications here. more than $14 million were going to be lost from Hamilton County. And that kind of loss is really almost impossible, if not outright impossible, to adjust, particularly in a very short term. So it's a complicated issue. What we are trying to remind everyone, and we really don't need to because they know that public libraries in Ohio are excellent. We have a lot of shared resources, and we really care about our communities. So it is something that we're watching closely because it does have long-term implications. There are a lot of things that can impact libraries, but like any entity, if your funding and your budget is immediately cut, it has immediately terrible ramifications for you and for the community.
And with what is in the House budget currently, and of course it's going to the Senate, so it could all change. The budget process is an emotional roller coaster ride, I know, for a lot of folks. What would this mean for funding in the short term for the library here?
Well, currently, we would be receiving a similar amount to what we received last year. And the thing to remember is really that public library fund has been flat basically for 25 years. Mm-hmm. So we all know, because the last couple of years in particular, there's been a lot of attention, rightfully so, to inflation and inflationary measures that have impacted all of us. And when you talk about a library, we're not in a special zone where that doesn't impact us. All of those same kinds of pressures are really coming to the public library. So a flat funding from the state that we had for a quarter century does not really produce the same amount of ability for us to keep pace with everything that we would need to and we would want to for our community's benefit.
We're talking in this recorded interview about the new documentary, Free for All, the Public Library, and the challenges public libraries are facing. Dawn, I want to talk about your film some more. The 135th Street Library in New York is featured in your documentary. Here's James Baldwin.
I went to the 135th Street Library at least three or four times a week. And I read everything there. I mean, every single book in that library. I read books like they were some weird kind of food. I was looking in books for a bigger world than the world in which I lived. In some blind and instinctive way, I knew that what was happening in those books was also happening all around me. And I was trying to make a connection between the books and the life I saw and the life I lived. You think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world. But then you read. It was books that taught me. The things that tormented me the most were the very things that connected me with all the people who were alive, who had ever been alive.
That library clearly had a major impact on James Baldwin. Dawn, what's the significance of that library overall?
That library was really the intellectual heartbeat of the Harlem Renaissance. Thanks to a group of women who ran that library, including a very well-known librarian to library historians, not so much to the rest of us, named Ernestine Rose, who got there, landed, decided she was going to make some major changes to welcome the new community that was arriving in Harlem, hired New York Public Library's first ever Black or Puerto Rican librarians, and they all worked together to turn it into a place where artists and ideas and performers, they had a theater in the basement where everyone was welcome, and James Baldwin was sort of at the tail end of that era. But there were all kinds of other famous people who passed through that library, and it's just a really beautiful story, and we're lucky to have some incredible photographs and a little tiny snippets of film from that period.
Dawn, how did segregation factor into the opening of some historic libraries across the country?
So I did not know a lot. I'm not a historian, although I am the daughter of a historian. So I've loved history, and I've worked on history documentaries my whole life, and each time I take on a new project, it's like getting your PhD or something in a subject that you knew nothing about before. And even though I've been a devoted library user my whole life, I realized I knew almost nothing about the history of them. And the history that I knew went like this: Ben Franklin, Melville Dewey, Andrew Carnegie, period. That's like what I knew. And as I kept traveling around, I learned that, like, oh no, yes, those three men were incredibly important, but many more libraries can trace their roots locally, specifically back to a group of women, a small group of women. And sometimes it's a woman who was a philanthropist, sometimes it was a women's club, but women played an incredibly important role in opening up libraries to everyone. And so if we talk about segregation, we have to go all the way back to the beginning of American libraries, when they were initially only open to basically white men. And even that was a revolutionary amount of openness, because prior to that, libraries were only open in most places in the world to either the clergy or the aristocracy, or at least the landed. In the United States, they were open to everyone, including poor immigrants, as long as you were an adult, you were a man, and you were white. And the evolution from there is women started to be allowed into the library, women started to be allowed into the library profession, children were allowed into the libraries. Under Andrew Carnegie, he started building children's rooms where children were actually welcomed, as opposed to, you know, not even allowed in, or if they were allowed in, that they had to be absolutely silent. There was no such thing as story time back then. And then it starts to cross the color line too. And being from the Deep South, I was particularly fascinated by the stories of all the people who were shut out, pushing forward the movement's ideals to open libraries to everybody. And I had very little knowledge, even though my parents were deeply involved in the civil rights movement. We got there a little bit later, but the very first sit-ins that happened in the 50s, actually going all the way back to the 40s, late 50s, and then very early 60s, happened in public libraries, in part because they were such a symbol of democracy. You know, if you have a big thing blazoned over your wall, your entrance, it says free to all or open to the public, that's a pretty straightforward challenge to people who know that they aren't allowed in and aren't welcomed. So there's some great footage of teenagers. It was a big thing with teenagers to go and sit in at the library and refuse to leave until they were allowed to check out a book or get access to information that they didn't have. A lot of times they would ask to check out the Bill of Rights just to highlight what was going on.
Well, Dawn, your film also includes an interview with a librarian discussing Martin Luther King Jr.
I have some very fond memories of Martin Luther King Jr. He loved to read and came to the library many times during the week. And he would walk up to the desk and he would look me straight in the eye. And I'd say, "Hello, Martin Luther. What's on your mind?" And he'd say, "I dipped into the future for as human eye could see." That's a poem. And then I would finish that line. "Saw a vision of the world and the wonders that would be." And every time Martin Luther would learn a poem, he would come to the library. And we played that game down through the years.
Dawn, what does that say about the role libraries play in the lives of children?
For so many children, they're the place that they go to open up the world. And for a lot of other children, they're sanctuaries from troubles they're facing, you know, in their homes, in their neighborhoods. Throughout time, I find that. Thomas Edison was a misfit kid who would probably be labeled on the spectrum these days, and he was completely a nightmare in school, was doing terribly. His mom had the foresight to pull him out, and he basically was homeschooled at the public library. Kids everywhere we went, from big cities to small towns, would tell us, like, "I come here because this is where I feel safe." Either because there's a lot of violence in their neighborhood. My dad had the same experience when he was growing up in a really rough immigrant neighborhood in Chicago. The neighborhood was dangerous. To be really honest, his home was dangerous. There was a lot of violence in the home. And the library was the place that he went for shelter, basically, and to have help with his homework because his mom didn't read or write English.
Paula, libraries have become this battleground across the U.S. Ohio's no exception. What's it been like to have libraries become kind of a target in these culture wars?
Well, I've been in libraries a long time. So I have been in libraries going on 4 decades, to be honest. So, you know, I think it's important for everyone to keep things in perspective. Libraries are places of ideas. And often when societies are in a little bit of transition or there's difficult things happening, someplace like a library is going to see different opinions. And we have a lot of processes that are available for people to capture those opinions. But that is not an unexpected event for us here. I can't speak for all public libraries. It varies quite a bit. But as I've said, you know, our community recognizes the value of the public library. They may have different opinions about a variety of things. But at the end of the day, I do think we should remember that our community, and I think people across the country, really care about their public library. They really value what the public library brings to their community as a civic asset and a element of civic pride.
Dawn, you documented the threats public libraries face. When you think about that, what is at stake, in your opinion?
I would say that what surprised me the most working on this project is how much the challenges that libraries are facing today come up again over and over again in history. So this is not the first chapter by a long shot of people wanting to contest books that are in libraries. It happened in Boston in the 1850s when the first big city public library opened, and there was a huge uproar about whether women should be allowed to check out what they considered at the time racy fiction, because they thought it would like warp their bodies and make them not want to ever have children and all kinds of crazy beliefs. And we're talking about books that are now considered absolute classics. So it's been going on for a very long time, and the only way that we're going to keep our libraries open and free and available to all is if all of us speak up.
Paula, what do you think is at stake? I mean, libraries are about a lot more than checking out books.
You know, information doesn't work like it used to. When I was a kid, you came down to the main library maybe the day after Thanksgiving, and you had to fight for the different drawers of the card catalog. And if somebody had the S drawer you needed, you had to wait. And that's all different. And information is still the same in that we all need it, and we need to fact check, and we need to understand it, but it comes in a different container now. So there's a real need for dynamic interactive spaces, and libraries have done a tremendous job of adapting and being flexible and understanding it's the root, it's the people and the information. It's not the container. We respect and care. We have a wonderful historic collection of books, rare books. Those are important, but really the people and the information, that's what's vital. We need to make those spaces available. And we also, again, we need to have appropriate funding to be able to do that, because they are civic assets. People are proud of these things. The community needs to feel that pride. And so we really need to understand that when we talk about threats, there's a variety of them. And I agree. Also, funding is cyclical. This is not the first time libraries have struggled with finding funds. Government procedures and practices on funding things change. And for folks to say, you know, I care about this thing, and I would like my money and my support to be noted because this thing is important to me in a very pragmatic, practical way. We see a lot of things that are important to us, but they're not as immediate, and the library is immediate. And I think that people really recognize that. You know, people understand how a public library works, and we're in the business of making people feel smart. And when you enter a public library, we just have the one question, how can I help you? And people understand that.
Dawn, you did so much research into the history of public libraries and the important role they've played in our country. When you think about the future of public libraries, what do you think about?
You know, a lot of people, while we were working on this project, would say to me, oh, we don't need libraries anymore. We have the internet. You know, basically, information is everywhere, and we don't need these buildings anymore. And I think it goes down to exactly what she was saying. It's not about storing information only. It's about community, and it's about people coming together, and it's about lives changing and the stories that unfold inside these buildings. And if you think about it that way, the future of the library is bright and infinite, you know? it just keeps evolving with the times. You know, we're stuck on this idea when I started, because I'm of the baby boomer generation, the tail end of it. And to me, the library is still very much about the printed book, or at least it was until a few years ago when I started checking out ebooks. But the library is not just about a place to store books. It's a place that strengthens our community. And librarians have already brought in a shocking amount of new things happening in their libraries, including you can get your GED at a lot of libraries, you can learn to speak English, you can learn how to sew, you can make puzzles. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, the list of things that they offer you. And there's no reason that that has to stop for any other reason than that we decide that we don't want to pay for them anymore. I mean, honestly, it comes down to that. These are our places. They're public. We pay for them. They belong to us. We get to decide what happens in them.
Well, I've been talking with filmmaker Dawn Logsdon and director of the Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library, Paula Brem-Heeger. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
The documentary Free for All, the Public Library premieres on Independent Lens on April 29th on PBS and locally on CET. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.